I guess one of the things that, I mean, I know that one of the things that interests me about your story, and I think it's one of the things that you're curious to talk to me about, is to what extent have you been sort of deviated from your course by various cultural or occultural lures and ruses and snares, as in you're having an experience. I mean, this may be why I think something like the cowboy and the fool mode is useful as a lens to look at your experience, because it reduces it to two really very basic, simple things, which is just, you have consciousness, maybe even you are consciousness at the deepest level, and consciousness has a faculty of perception. Like, how does consciousness become conscious of things through perception? So you exist through perception, consciousness and perception. And then there are, let's say in this model, there are two forms of consciously perceiving yourself and reality, and one is through focusing and the other is not through focusing, right? We probably can't say much about unfocused awareness. It's a negative term, right? It's like Jordan Peterson, he just wants to throw out all that stuff, and he just wants to define chaos as, or rather, he wants to define what won't submit to order as chaos. I don't know actually if you're familiar with Jordan Peterson. I'm only referring to him because I've written about him recently, and a lot of people are, referring to his models of interpreting reality. That's all. But he, anyway, yeah, he has a bias towards order, just as in the world, we have a bias towards focused awareness, rational awareness, another way of looking at it. We ration things out, compartmentalize, and we categorize everything. That's what focused awareness does. Unfocused awareness doesn't do it. And because of that, unfocused awareness has access to far more information than focused awareness. And you could say that unfocused awareness really is just unfiltered receiving of the information of existence. So I think, and this is also based on my experiences of premature enlightenment, not that I think your Kundalini actually fits in that now that you've described it, but anyway, it was premature something, maybe. That I forgot what I was going to say. That's a great example of focused and unfocused awareness there. What was I going to say? I know, because I got this very strong in my mind. I said, "I think," see, and now it's like I've got to actually tell you what I think, and I can't tell you what I think. Because that's my focus side, trying to extract and extrapolate from my unconscious or my deeper self something that, I can put into language. So I think I was going to say something like the unfocused awareness and enlightenment are very similar, and that, I mean, that we are always in a state, we're always in touch with everything that's happening, like our bodies, even if we just keep it to bodies and our brains, and I don't like the brain model, but our physical apparatus is always absorbing, receiving and absorbing all the information that's going on around us, and we don't have to focus. Like if you think of your eyes, you can look out at the world and drop focus, as in you're not focusing on anything particular, and you will your visual field is full of information. You just can't identify it, but physically, you are receiving all the information that those 180 degrees that your eyes are able to pick up, right? So I think we're like that as perceivers, like physically and perhaps metaphysically, we are always perceiving, receiving, and absorbing everything around us, and that's the natural state. That's the state that babies are in, And then over time, we learn to we develop this focused awareness because we need it to survive. And focused awareness somehow goes hand in hand with the construction of the social altar or the ego, the constructed identity. And if a trauma, you know, if there's a traumatic basis to that developmental period or traumatic elements, then the way that our awareness gets focused and our identity gets fixed is traumatic. It's stuck, you know. It's disproportionately inflexible. Like unfocused awareness, or focused awareness does need to be a little bit inflexible because that's the whole point. We're zeroing in on things. But if we zero in on one thing and then we just get completely stuck on it and we actually can't see anything else, then we're like in Plato's cave. We can't actually see anything because we can only see this one thing. Like to the hammer, everything looks like a nail syndrome. So try and bring it back to what I started talking about here, which is that if you as awareness are kind of looking for ways to experience yourself as you really are and to experience existence as it really is, you're looking for a way out of this fixed perspective of focused awareness, while at the same time you'll be pulling in two different directions, because the focused awareness is saying no, we just want more focus, we want to get the focus even better, you know, because let's say the focus is the world, which is in a sense one object. It's making the world a better place, it's optimal functionalizing or whatever, you know, all the different value set that you had back then, right? This is all about you becoming more functional, optimized within the neoliberal context of making the world a better place, so you don't have to think that you're being selfish, right? So it's a very clever sort of ideology, because it's like enlightened selfishness, supposedly. What was I saying? So yeah, so there's part of you that's trying to just get more and more focused, taking the testosterone, while this other part is saying no, very gently, because it's the very nature of it isn't to push or force things. That's really, it's not going to work. This is not going to work. You can be as optimal as you want, but if the nature of reality isn't the way you think it is, you'll just end up like the Terminator. You know, you're a killing machine. You're really, really good at doing this one thing, but the one thing you're really good at is not good. So it's a really bad place to end up in. So our souls, they experience the pressure, you could say, of that narrowing of the bandwidth. And at a certain point, I think they break through one way or another. It can be apocalyptic, it can be catastrophic, or it can be enlightenment. You know, it can be really, really positive, or it could be really negative, but it has to come through. And one of the ways that the focused awareness of the ego tries to counteract that is by, if it can't suppress it and it can't avoid it forever, which it can't, then it, as it did what you did, it finds ways to put a handle on it. Well, something here is happening here and I don't know what it is, so I better figure out what it is, and if I can't figure out what it is, I'm going to just pretend I know what it is and act as if I knew what it was, and treat these phenomena like they're nails and just keep hitting them, keep hitting them, and eventually they'll act. It's like a, you know, a self fulfilling delusion. So you treat your kundalini rising as if it's giving you a turbo-boosted ego, and that will work for a little while. I guess what I'm curious about now, because you're still, I mean, it seems like you've come quite a long way in a very short period of time, because you've gone from the first matrix to, let's say, sort of outside the first matrix. I don't know the extent of your kundalini rising, even though you've described it quite a bit. I'm still not sure like how profound it was, but to some extent it's like you were outside your reality tunnel. And that doesn't mean you're in the second matrix, that's the point I'm making, but either you just stay outside and you just, well, face the realities that existence is completely incomprehensible and beyond your control. And it's just, I mean, well, who can even go there, really? I mean, until you've gone all the way there. But anyway, if that's not an option, then either you try and get back in the first matrix, you just try and refurbish your identity, more or less as it was, but just, you know, with this new package of experience that makes it a little more special than before. Or, and I think it's kind of and or, you find your way into the second matrix, which is seemingly a different interpretation of reality than the previous one, but with many of the same elements, just expanded, really. Like, it's a bit like going from the office to the fun fair, you know, or to Disneyland, or to Burning Man, I suppose, would be probably a better, more adult, and a more kind of exact version. It's not really that different. It just seems radically different. But point is that you can go to Burning Man as often as you want and stay as long as you can, but you're still going to end up going back to your life. It's still just really a kind of sort of amped up and spiritualized version of life as you know it. And the second matrix is like this, only it's like Burning Man. It, because it's expanded, it has a lot more dead ends and dangers and pitfalls and mines and, you know, a lot more things that can go wrong and that can harm yourself with, such as psychedelics, occultism. Well, those are the big two anyway that you've experimented with. But on the other hand, it is an expanded view. I mean, you do see more of the world. Conspiracy would be the third one. Paranoid awareness, that definitely has its dangers. On the other hand, you do see more than you were seeing previously, and you see more than people who have just stayed confined to that reality tunnel can see. So it's not, it's definitely has its upsides, you know, it has value, provided that, I suppose I'd say, provided that it's recognized as something on the way to something rather than the destination point. So in your case, well, I'm a bit wary about saying this because it might seem arrogant or presumptuous, but I'll say it anyway, just because otherwise I might never finish this little speech, that your journey through all of this paraphernalia and phantasmagoria and whatnot has led you to having a conversation with me, who is someone I have been through an awful lot of this. So, like, I've explored many of the rooms of this mansion, and although I'm not out of the mansion, I'm definitely pretty committed to leaving the mansion, to not getting lost in the rooms and the, you know, the fantastic imagery and the temptation to turn the infinite into another hunting ground for the ego, I guess is what I'm trying to get to, this will to power thing that you mentioned, which is so endemic to it's the ideology of focused awareness in the first matrix of the world as we know it. But that, I'd say that's because it's the ideology underlying it, which is the second matrix that was created. I suppose I'm just thinking this now. I suppose the second matrix was created before the first, like the first was created out of the second. I'm just improvising this now, as I've never thought it before. And, you know, these are just terms. I mean, ironically, the terms first and second matrix belong to the second matrix, really. You can't talk your way out of it. I guess, I mean, I could almost say, like, what are you going to do with all this knowledge now that you've had it, all this experience? I mean, where's it all leading? It's leading right now. It's led to this conversation with me. So, of course, that's the question, the burning question for me. Like, why are we having this conversation besides to make a podcast? And that's why I was kind of a bit tentative at the beginning, like, oh, Corey, based on his history, he seems like somebody who fits rather with where I'm at now in life, which is wanting to step up and take responsibility for the experience that I've embodied and integrated, and help others, not just not to make the mistakes I've made, because I think I've done a pretty good job of that through my writing. A lot of people are, I think, now avoiding similar pitfalls because I've described them so well from my own experience. But there's got to be more to it than just don't make the same mistakes or don't make these mistakes. There's got to be, this is what life really is for. This is what existence really is calling us to. This is the purpose that you're here for, and this is therefore the purpose that for our speaking. And that's also got to be more than just healing the trauma. But on the other hand, it's the healing the trauma is essential to that. One has to become whole to become whole, so to speak. One has to see the ways in which one is fractured and fragmented on the way to becoming whole, I think, to a degree. I don't think you have to see every crack and every fracture, but certainly to have a really felt, lived sense of being cut off and being disconnected from one's soul is essential to reorienting oneself back to that wholeness. So, where are you at now with all of this?
Well, I feel, I feel embodied in a way that I think I was looking for a long time, and that maybe underlied a lot of was underlying a lot of my behavior that took me in the wrong direction. To go back to bodybuilding and looking for egoic kind of identity success all the way through to trying to heal trauma and using psychedelics and smoking pot and all of that. I credit you with using the kind of, I think of it as a spectrum between dissociation and embodiment as a way of seeing how I'm doing. And I feel pretty embodied most of the time. I think there are some influences that I can identify that I haven't fully dealt with that maybe keep me from being as embodied as I would like. One of them is actually, it's a really tricky one to deal with, which is actually technology. Not that I think that I need to totally isolate myself from technology, but for example, like a smartphone is really easy. It's a really, for me at least, it's a big trigger to dissociate sometimes, and I actually get, not to go into too much detail on this, but I actually get some physical symptoms if I stay on it for too long. Like I'll get itchy. I'll get like really see you scratching your neck there. But I'll get like sort of hives and a rash if I stay on a smartphone for too long. And so I'm in this weird place where a lot of the ways that I'd like to make a living would require me to be on technology more than I'd like to be. And so I'm trying to devise a way to just use enough technology that I don't get these symptoms and that I don't experience myself as dissociating into the technology too often. And that's a little bit of a tricky problem to solve, but I feel really open. I wish that I could narrate it a little bit better, but I definitely feel the best that I've felt maybe ever. Unless I go back to like really early childhood. I had a pretty good early childhood, overall. But yeah, I've been forced to find a lot of kind of daily practices that work really well for me. One of them is like watching the sun come up, some things like that that seem to really help with the embodiment aspect of things. And also figuring out what to discard and what to throw away. And to go back to what you were saying about modes of awareness, not just trying to repackage every experience as like, okay, back to the same identity now, but a little bit more interesting. So I've tried to do away with a lot of aspects of identity that don't serve me. And again, mainly for economic reasons. You do, I mean, for instance, like I need to have a resume that has things on it that I would just as soon delete if they didn't help me with economic aspects of my life. So there's some trade-offs there, but it's much more conscious now. So I'm very happy with the place I'm at overall. In those ways, I'm not sure if that answered your question at all.
Partly does. I mean, maybe it's the main part actually, because where you're situated in your physical daily reality, that's the main part for you, certainly. Unless we're going to get into spiritual, and I'm not sure we should. I think the part that part of me was wondering about was in terms of information and focus and interest, where are you at in that regard? Because, I mean, with this curve that you're on from the Sam Harris neoliberal sort of mindset to the psychedelic chomping, occult dabbling, podcast listening guy who ended up talking to me, like what do you feel you're pursuing? Do you feel you're pursuing something in that regard? Like as a well, I don't know, as a something?
Well, I would love to, there's an inherent pleasure in creating and making things that other people can enjoy or benefit from. I don't have any real outline of how to do that, but perhaps I'm in a gestational period if I would if I create something in the future that relates to these interests, then I would consider this a gestational period, but I'm not entirely sure. What I will say is that I have a real, it's like I've developed this allergy to things that don't feel authentic to me. And I think that's really useful, but it also makes it hard to, sometimes it makes it hard to, this is going to sound a little bit superficial, but it makes it kind of hard to be entertained sometimes. like it's really, I find myself listening to a lot of weird fringe stuff, and I'm not like disturbed by my tastes or anything like that, but I will spend a lot of time trying to find material that seems authentic and interesting. And there's not necessarily like an unlimited amount of that sort of thing out there. And some of the things, both I would say both from the first Matrix and the second Matrix, especially from the kind of conspiratainment parts of the second Matrix, are really just not things that I can tolerate very well now. It just feels really inauthentic and kind of like the people that create it construct it in a way that, I mean, it's clearly pretty cynical, a lot of it. So there's something in me now that, I can't read other people's minds, so I don't know if they're really authentic or really not, but I think that I'm really drawn toward people who are doing things in an authentic way, and that tends to pull me out to the margins and liminal spaces. And that's a big shift. Not that I was just consuming totally random or like really mainstream things previously, but I'm really conscious that what I put in to my consciousness is going to affect my worldview. And so I'm pretty careful, and I would even say fastidious about what I look at and how I look at it, and make sure to look at it pretty critically, which I think is another reason why I like your why I like your style of discourse and analysis, because as you said about yourself, you tend to use the critique as a lens to look at everything, which is, resonates with me.
Use the critique as a lens to look at everything. I say it's, I use the external as a lens to look at the internal, might be how I would phrase it.
Sure, yes, and not to speak for you, I think you've, I probably didn't get the words quite right. I think I've heard you say something that sounds like both of those things to me before, like separately.
Well, I suppose, yeah, I mean, also that, yeah, and I think I have said this very recently, I don't know if it was public, but I don't think it has been made public, so maybe you're listening in on my private conversations. It was actually a Skeptica thing, I think, so it's going to be aired, but yes, when I look at any specific thing like Whitley Strieber or Crowley or whatever, it's as a sample of a whole, like I see it as a microcosm by which one, from which one can extrapolate something about the macrocosm. So yeah, that's similar, or even the same, I suppose, because I'm saying that it's all integral, like everything that we choose to look at is integral to a larger thing, and of course we are integral to that thing too. But you know, where I'm at now is, as I said, I'm just finishing up the series on the trans, on identity politics, and I've just written this piece about David Sharner, which is going to be the first thing after that, and that coincides with the intention to not always be focusing critically on things, to try and develop a non-critical eye as well. Maybe that's kind of a little bit like unfocused awareness, though, because when one is writing, one has to be focusing. Language itself is generally very focused, but I think I've been over-focused by my critical tendency in my skill set. It's been generally critical. So that means critical doesn't necessarily have to be negative. One can positive criticize, but it definitely leans towards the negative. I mean, the word itself suggests negative. If you're criticizing somebody, they generally don't like it. And I just think I've found that just much more easy and natural to my persona is to focus on what's wrong. And let's face it, it's a lot easier to find things to criticize than things to praise. It's a lot easier to find negative, data points to analyze than positive. And as I've always said, it's not either or, because one can recontextualize negative in a larger positive if one really goes deep enough into it. And that, I have had feedback like that about Prisoner Infinity, that it had a very positive effect on the people reading it. So that's an interesting phenomenon in itself. But I still think that I've been quite inhibited about speaking or writing positively. I know I have. Anyway, I'm just sharing that. It's not really leading to a point or a question or anything. Just in terms of me being more liminal than usual, I suppose, or than ever, talking to you as in between, modes or focuses. And I don't think it's necessarily superficial what you said about, I think entertain is perhaps a superficial word, but what engages you, that you're finding it harder to get engaged by things, becoming more discerning about what engages your attention. That's more than just entertainment, because entertainment means passing the time. Engagement is the opposite. It means actually using the time. And that would be a key distinction, perhaps, as you want to use your time in a way that's nourishing and enriching, rather than simply pass it. So I think that's an ongoing concern for me as well. It's like I guess retraining my interests, so they're more and more wholesome. I'm engaging in more and more wholesome activities, certainly. Anyway, I'm not sure where I'm going with this. I'm feeling very hot. It's actually very hot here, and I don't have a fan. So if I'm starting to sweat, that would be the reason. I'm just going to take down this so some air comes in. That's better. Let's just check the time. What time did we start? 2.
Yep.
Okay, so that's just 2 hours, so we're doing good.